Earth and Sinew followed the song of the rising music down the tightly knit alleys of the completed market. Rafters were hung with laurels and strands of the golden core blossoms. Merchants called wares to them as they passed. They laughed and smiled, caught up with each other, eager to emerge from the maze and into the center of the old crossroads town, where men and women and boys and girls alike, all adorned in the colors of spring, would be dancing upon the raised square. Flowers in their hair and upon their lapels, faces made warm by fine foods and sweet meads, elite and commoner, rich and poor, they would move and mingle unhindered as they danced with each other under the reeling gaze of a starlit sky. They came upon it all in a moment and rushed to join the fray, basking in the gleefully orchestrated tomfoolery. After a time, the bugle call for the champion's dance went up, and the floor was cleared and people pressed to the sides. The two descended the dice, taking places in line at an open grill to purchase hot smoked kebabs and sugar-charred pea pods, while they waited for the contestants to present themselves before the judge. Meanwhile, several of the soldiers, who had been merrily lounging in the corners of the festivities, were commandeered to help lift the great core-blossom trunk onto a set of massive axles, which were also being placed on the dance floor. Old Philman himself, the smithy who had first crafted the champion's pillar many years before, stepped forward and drove the iron crank into the tree base, then stood beside it, waiting. 15 men and youths presented themselves, each blinded with garland hoods woven of the core blossoms. The eldest were given the advantage of beginning the dance already standing on the trunk, 5 abreast, while the others were set in a line behind 2 short flights of wooden steps. The chimes were rung, the bugle called again, and the band began to play the challenging tones of the Dance of Champions. The people all around took up the melody as well, cheering and calling as Philman's massive arms began to turn the crank of the trunk, slowly at the start, but ever faster to match the hastening rhythm of the song. It did not take long for the first contestant to fall, pulling a second with him as he flung his arms wildly about. The younger challengers, first in line, were then prodded by the judge to step from the well-placed stairs onto the already moving beam, risking all for glory in one fatal leap. The first to do so slipped directly off, plummeting face first onto the hardwood floor of the dice, to the cacophony of cheers and groans from the crowd. The second, a sturdy and acrobatic youth, landed his mount and joined the dance, even as the contestant beside him rocked the platform with his rump and collapsed backwards into the group of those waiting their chances to do better. The laughter and singing alike crescendoed more and more with each new demonstration of slapstick, until only 2 remained upon the beam, that same young acrobatic challenger, and one of the original contestants, a gray-bearded fellow who all the while moved his fleet feet with a broad smile carved upon his face. Faster and faster the music played. The smithy's arms and face were now coated with glistening sweat as he labored to keep the pace. Cheers swelled to deafening proportions. Earth and Sinew were beside themselves with mirth. All the while, the bugler called the melody of the dance, the hastiest tarantella of merry bursting passion. But then, the fortress of sound was broken by another call. This was not the way it was supposed to be. This was a new song, clear and crying. Its harmony brass pealing over all other sounds was poignant and unearthly, weighty and regal. This was no mere bugle. Both contestants went down at once, knocked from their places by the unexpected sound. The band and the bugle cut silent as well, even as the chaotic crowd went dumb. The entire square would have been wholly silent except for the hushed voices that began to ripple from the far northwest corner, like an epicenter sending forth an earthquake of whispers from mouth to mouth. A vanguard. It is the Shadow Sun. Could it really be him? It is for certain. Yes. The bastard king of Ambra? Impossible. I told you it was so. He lives. Is it true? I can see no better than you. But there, look! The Shadow Sun rises from the city of dark walls again. Earth's kebab had gone cold in his hand. Sinu was no less awestruck, though not so much as to neglect to finish her peapods. Guardsmen, who moments before were lounging in corners, a witbier in hand and a pretty girl on the arm, rushed to the fore of the crowd with salutes of attention for the fully outfitted men-at-arms who now broke a pathway through the crowd. Vested in black armors that glistened with the subtle tinted blues and reds of the plate smelt that only came from the royal forges of Ambra, the soldiers were grim-eyed and cold as they pushed through the murmuring crowd, making way for a line of mounted knights who rode behind them. All alike bore the crest of the Shadow Sun, worked in filigree on their chests, a dark starburst of gold over black. The same emblem was embroidered on the tunics of the three heralds who followed on foot, brandishing their strange, rounded horns aloft as they marched in locked ganderstep. The vanguard took up stations about the dice, a square phalanx of men armored in black and gold. The murmuring of the crowd, which had roiled like a low-boiling cauldron, slowly died away before them, until all that remained was a solitary knight upon a midnight destrier, making his way down the widened pathway through the crowd. His mount was just that much larger than the others. His cape was wrought of just that much more gleaming darkness. His face was entirely hidden by a helm, though even that left little doubt as to who he was. Where his men-at-arms all wore barboot helms with T-shaped openings through which the hardened faces could be seen, and where each mounted knight donned a black armet with trapdoor-like covers for their faces crafted in the shape of a man raging in his battle cry, this final rider bore no mere warrior's mark. His helm was a single solid plate, worked with fine detail as the soft face of a young child, yet set about it with a haloed starburst as a crown, the gleaming gold sending spiked rays in glorifying diameter out from the black metal. There was no doubt. This was indeed the bastard king of Ambra. This was, of a certainty, the very Shadow Sun. He passed through the knights, whose mounts had taken station at the foot of the dais, then rode his mount up among the men-at-arms who stood at attention on its stage. There he turned his charger to sit it like a living throne, and slowly reached his hand to remove his helm, while the heralds sounded forth their brass one last time.